It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's already April 13th and 14th, depending on when you listen to this. If you're listening to this on Saturday the 13th, that's at 9:05, and Sunday the 14th, that's at 7:05. So if there's a nuance that my guest and I talk about today that you want to rehear, so to speak, you can listen again on Sunday. And then, of course, if there's still a third time you want to listen to it, just go on Northeast Delta Dental, our website, anydelta.com. I have a radio section of like 7 or 8 years of radio history, and you can click on the show that you want to hear again. So a big shout out to my running friends. We had a great turnout for the SCA 5K road race, which is part of the Capital Air Race Series. So it's hard to believe we already have two of the races out of the eight done. The next one coming up is in a couple of weeks, the NHTI Delta Dental race, and that's on a Friday night, the only one of the series on a Friday night. And also for my running friends, thanks for turning out to Red's road race on Sunday. This past Sunday, that also raises money for the community. So the running crowd is great. So with me this weekend is Bob Faw. I've had Bob. Bob's a successful author and very much in demand in terms of a speaker and in running training sessions and so forth. And we didn't stumble upon each other. We kind of connected. The universe kind of connected us. And one of the topics that we both I feel a need to share is on mindfulness. And Bob, thank you for joining me this weekend. And tell me most recently some of your appearances and then and your books, and then we'll get right into the Mindfulness, a Success Superpower. I love that title, by the way.
Thank you so much, Tom. Yeah, it's great to be here again. Thanks. So my book, I have my major book, and I have a couple of ebooks, but my major book is Energize, Ignite Passion and Performance with User-Friendly Brain Tools. And I speak on that topic, and I've recently in the last year and a half started speaking specifically about the power for our brain that mindfulness has. And it's just been a blast. I speak with the Red Cross, Southern New England College, and Fidelity, a variety of places.
Awesome. And tell us about the Matchbox Group.
So Matchbox Group is my consulting firm. So we're a positive change consulting firm. So we're very mindful, if you will, to make sure that we're bringing the best of brain science and social science to help organizations go through positive change, whether it's the culture, their leadership skills, their people skills, whatever it might be.
Awesome. So let me tell you how I got into mindfulness. There were two things, and that's maybe let's try a definition of it. So a few years ago, I was driving hands-free. I live in Bow. The office is in Concord. So it's at most a 12-minute ride. Generally, it's a good time to decompress. We've talked about that before. But in this particular night, I needed to talk to one of my board chairmen. Northeast Delta Dental is actually several companies, in particular Delta Dental Plan of New Hampshire, Delta Dental Plan of Maine, and Delta Dental Plan of Vermont. So I was talking to one of my board chairs on a topic, and I drove from Concord to Bow, finished the call in my driveway as I was driving up the driveway. And I had no, and again, this was hands-free, so I was legal, but I had no recollection of how I got there. And I thought, oh my God, that was like a real wake-up call for me. And then the second thing that kind of triggered this for me, Bob, was, as you know, we've been recognized several times for one of the best companies, you know, to work for. And
well-deserved.
Oh, thank you. And in national and local awards. And when I speak, when I'm on panels, obviously, all the best companies in the United States and New Hampshire are saying the same thing, you know, pay attention to people, and you know the profits and everything else will take care of itself. And a lot of you know, be attentive to your external customers. But one of the things that CEOs have been saying they're really concerned about is they seem that their employees are multitasking too much. And I noticed just kind of I manage by walking around and I'm seeing people, typing an email and they have their phone on their shoulder talking to a customer, and I kind of just randomly looked at some emails and some other survey results, and I could see we were kind of we're getting occasional mixed results, which is unusual for us. So I thought, oh my God, you know, we've got to take a step back, and particularly because every one of the other best companies, CEOs or HR leaders were saying the one thing that concerns them is not the talent war. Best companies, people apply for jobs that don't exist. So we have plenty of talent that applies for all of our positions, except that all of us were concerned about, you know, the fact that our employees seemed, for our best companies, seemed a little stressed out because they were multitasking. So it was, but it was interesting because, of course, you know, these are the best companies, and they were having these concerns. So what about all the other companies? So we brought in Professor Burrell, and she's done work with mindfulness, and it's been organically growing in our company. And now, you know, she comes in, and 30 to 40 people are meeting with her, depending on the, you know, the particular session. It's growing organically. One thing I don't do is I don't, you know, force any training session on anybody, but it was absolutely amazing, and it's been life-changing for many employees. And then at that point, I said to Professor Burrell, let's, you know, write a book codifying, you know, all of the stories that we've learned from Delta Dental of people who've gotten off their meds and they're no longer getting a divorce. And then, of course, they bring a positive approach into the office and are now become exceptional employees. So we wrote a book called Mindfulness, A Better Me, A Better You, A Better World, and get it at Gibson's and so forth. So that's kind of how I got into it. And then, of course, we wanted to get this book published because we didn't want people, you know, once the topic becomes hot, Bob, as you know, then it's like people, they get, these books come out and it's like a silver bullet. And I really wanted Annabelle to give the science behind and sort of me the practical advice. So that's how I got into it. So let's take a step back. Why don't you define in your own words what mindfulness is, maybe what it isn't, and why do you believe it's a success superpower?
Well, mindfulness, I have about 8 different definitions for it.
Try them all. You have plenty of time.
Okay.
Yet.
All right. Good. So one of the big things about mindfulness is, as you said before, well, to build on what you said before, is being aware of what you are doing in the moment and also including how you feel, but being calm about it, right? So you're not overreacting to those things you're noticing. You're just sort of being mindful of them. And for me, I think about it as the reason it can be a superpower, first, to your point earlier, is that if you practice mindfulness in terms of saving the beautiful things in life, if you practice mindfulness in terms of doing one thing at a time, we tend to feel much less stress. We tend to regenerate better, both emotionally and physically, and often can lead to things like you said before, getting off of medications or bringing down blood pressure, many different things like that. So there's all that, but it's also, not only does it make you stronger and wiser in those ways, but you can use mindfulness to focus on very specific things that you want to do. So going into a meeting, for example, and this is where I see it as a brain hack, is by mindfully thinking. So I'll give you an example. Walking into this interview, I was thinking about how much I like you, Tom, and how much I like your company, and how much I've enjoyed past radio interviews with you. And as I'm mindful of that, that helps me relax myself. It helps me focus on how do I add value to the conversation instead of worrying about how am I going to sound or am I going to be nervous, right? So it puts my focus where I need it and helps me be mindful in ways that then, because our brain, as complex as it is, it also is fairly simple in the number of things it can focus on. As you notice in that drive home, you can focus on a call or you can focus on the route. Now, the good thing is the default network system in your brain took over and got you home just fine. But you're not quite as safe without your prefrontal cortex engaged on your drive. But being able to do that and choose what you're going to focus on, whether it's you're driving home and you're stressed out day and you're starting to think, wait a second, I don't want to walk in with this stress about my wife. So I can be mindful about my anxiety, but I'm going to shift that to I'm mindful about what I love about my spouse. What's the most beautiful thing about her? So when I walk in, that's what I'm carrying with me.
I think that type of transition, as you described coming today for the radio, is so important. Tell us more about this kind of transition.
And matter of fact, one of the things I highly recommend to people is to never end your meetings on the hour. So if you say, all right, we're going to have a meeting from 1 to 1:50, for example, at the latest, because if you actually want to perform at your best, you need to be mindful. And you can't do that if you're running without thinking and you're not able to write down your to-dos. So being able to finish that last conversation, make sure that you've written down your notes if you need to. If you're getting on another call or stepping to another meeting, you spend at least a couple minutes in between in that white space you're talking about, which is just noticing where you are, whether it's going for a brief walk around the office, or whether it's looking outside, we've got a beautiful rainy day outside, whatever it might be, and then take a deep breath and then start thinking about the things you want to be focusing on in the next meeting. Like what, like specifically, and this is a thing for mindfulness, our brain loves simple, compelling things to focus on. So we think, here's the one thing I most want to make sure we get out of this next meeting. And then when you walk in, it's like a superpower because everybody else around, like you said, with their hair all crazy and they're just reacting. You might be the one person in the room who's saying, let's just remember, here's what we're trying to get to this. So instead of arguing over it, let's work together to solve this.
And tell us also about the non-judgmental orientation. We'll touch on that and we'll cover it further after break.
Yeah, so this is actually, I find, one of the most profound elements to it. And that is the ability to be able to be okay with whatever you feel inside, right? So many times we're raised to be very judgmental. Anger is bad, you know, lust is good, whatever, you know, all these kind of feelings, or love or whatever. And instead of just say, hey, we're normal human beings. We have a full range of emotions that come and go. Let's just notice it and then choose what to do. So we're not reactive all the time to the emotions. We're calm about them. I was very angry at somebody yesterday from something that she wrote to me. And instead of reacting to her, I just set down the phone. We were texting. And I took some time to be mindful. What am I angry about? What's going on? Let it flow out of me. And didn't judge myself for the anger. And it turned out I was angry about something that had nothing to do with her, which, so I was really glad I didn't judge myself. And then when I calmed down, I could then talk to her and communicate with her in a much more respectful manner.
Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio with Bob Faw. We're going to be talking about more on mindfulness. It's April 13th and 14th. So let's get right into it, Bob. So a couple things, some research numbers or quotes. Recent research indicates that when we are stressed, we are less able to support our families and colleagues, and this in turn directly raises everyone's stress. And of course, when we have that stress, it can't possibly be healthy. And from my business colleagues, CEOs, you know, again, we all pride ourselves in multitasking, and I did 300 emails while I was talking on the phone three times. But basically, humans are not really set up to multitask. I didn't coin the term, but we really should unitask. And so when we're more mindful, more focused, research also says that there are 60% fewer errors and defects, 37% lower absenteeism, 18% higher productivity, and 16% higher profitability. And in my book on mindfulness with Professor Burrell, we had actual examples and in a composite way, and our employees enabled us to quote them. But so here's an example. I've been on low-grade tranquilizers for years. Since I began the mindfulness and meditation classes, I have found myself to be more relaxed, more focused, and less anxious. A few weeks ago, I gave up the tranquilizers and have been just fine.
Wow.
And then another one, maybe more focused on numbers, but our departments have daily goals. You could get stressed about making your numbers. Instead, think about being present, doing one thing at a time. Stay focused and you'll do a good job and make your numbers. So,
wisdom.
The idea of being present, it's in some respects so simple, but it's so sophisticated. So tell us more about, like, when you're stressing, you make everybody else around you stressful, and it can't possibly be good for your heart health or anything else. So tell us about that.
Yeah. I mean, and just to be clear, short durations of stress, what's called eustress, EU stress, is actually helpful, right? It helps us grow and all that. What causes the problems is chronic stress and a lot of unnecessary stress. So when you're working, what you want the stress to be about is, how do I come up with a more creative solution to this? Or how do I get this done faster? That's the kind of stress that puts you on your edge, you know, good edge. But what happens is, to use your example from before, when you're thinking about 12 projects and your stress is creating what's called cortisol in your body, right? In your brain, what's the stress hormone. And it actually makes it harder for you to think creatively. It makes it harder for you to work collaboratively with somebody else. So that kind of high stress over a period of time burns you out. And we're incredibly sensitive to other people's moods, their body language, their tone of voice, the words they choose. And both research has shown that both optimism and pessimism are contagious. Same thing with stress. And it ripples out. And everybody, to your point with those numbers, everybody's productivity starts to drop, their ability to focus, and the relationships start to deteriorate as well.
So that's why I know, and maybe you can expand on this, you know, why is it especially important for leaders to master mindfulness? I know, like, when I have high energy and something goes wrong and I still have the high energy, and everybody can resolve the problem so much better than if I look stressed out. So tell us the theory and science behind that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the science is called priming. So everything we experience around us primes us, affects our mood, actually affects our brain chemistry based on the images in our own mind. And of course, the person with the single most amount of impact in an organization usually is the leader, because everybody's watching her to see, is she mad at me? Are things going to be bad? She knows more about the future than I do, all that kind of stuff, right? So there's a lot of impact. And so if the leader walks in, even if she has indigestion, but she has a disgruntled look on their face, people start to get anxious because they think, what if it's me? Also, one of the leader's jobs, in my perspective, is 30 years as a consultant, is to support everybody around him and to help everybody else be successful. Most people think leaders is the top and everybody serves them, but highly successful companies are like yours, in which the leader's saying, I'm a coach to people and I need to be present and warm and by the way, calm and confident is what I focus on, helping people become mindful to be calm and confident under stress.
It's kind of an aspect of servant leadership.
Absolutely.
That certainly we practice. You know, yeah. At East Delta Dental. So can you practice this and train on? We mentioned that meditation is one of the three essential foundations of mindfulness, along with listening in a non-judgmental way and using, you know, time well. But can you train, no different than training for a road race, can you train yourself for mindfulness? Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, it's very important, because our brain is drawn into drama, is drawn into anything with conflict, which is part of why we give in, even though it's counterproductive to do so. So it's really important to do the training to develop ourselves. And by the way, the cool thing is, meditation doesn't have to be in an ashram on a mountain with flowing robes, right? The science is in that you can take 15 minutes a day and you can meditate on your breath, or you can meditate on what you love about the people around you. There's a variety of different things you can focus on, and meditate on the nature scene, whatever it might be, and it calms you deeply. And it also, if you're able to, and this is the key thing, when your mind goes off somewhere, gently bring it back on task. Not forcefully, not rudely, but gently bring it back on task. And as you do this, it trains your brain, like exercise, to be able to stay focused, to essentially say no to the invitations of conflict at times that are counterproductive or useless, and bring your focus back and stay on task and be that calm, confident leader, parent, friend, whatever that you want to be in the world.
I like the way you put that, because sometimes, you know, when I do a talk on my book and we talk about mindfulness, I can see 20% of the audience kind of like, oh God, here we go. And so I usually kind of disarm them by saying, you see, I'm not wearing earth shoes. I don't have a flowing robe. They're a little, I don't know, scared about my hair maybe. Other than that, it's like, but in my case, like I said earlier, I mean, meditation can be just my quiet 5 minutes in my office before I drive home, or my 5 quiet minutes at home before I go to work. And so whatever works. And tell the audience, Bob, how, like, as you're training and, you know, like the first couple times you do it, your mind may wander. That's kind of the natural part of the process. And that's what really practice is all about, right?
Absolutely. And it comes back to the non-judgmental piece, which is to not even judge yourself for your mind wandering. Just say, oh, of course it does, and just gently bring it back. And one of the beautiful things about that is that you're also training yourself to be more gentle and compassionate with yourself, more understanding of what you really are, instead of false expectations of perfection or whatever. It also can help you become much more non-judgmental and accepting and compassionate of other people. And by the way, you don't even have to do 5 to 15 minutes. You can do a 2-minute relaxation exercise where you envision the most peaceful place you can remember and do slow, deep breathing with your feet planted on the floor. And that can bring you into what's called the relaxation response. And no lie, before your next meeting, you've just upped your ability to be productive and focused probably by, this is just guesswork, 15-20% easy. And if you're in a really bad space, it might be even more significant.
Yeah, the research seems to indicate that. So if I'm an HR leader or a CEO leader listening to this, would I get a hold of you at matchboxgroup.com?
That's right, absolutely.
It would be well worth it. And here's something I think the audience will find interesting, is that mindfulness can also improve sort of ad hoc decision making, which kind of sounds like an oxymoron. So tell us the foundation of mindfulness, how that can improve on the fly decision making.
Yeah, so this is one of those interesting pieces that's not readily apparent at the beginning when you look at mindfulness. But as I was saying before, if I keep in mind, and every once in a while throughout the day, I become mindful again of the reason I'm here is to serve the people around me, and I'm to help us achieve our purpose. And I'm clear, but maybe I'll put our purpose of our company, our nonprofit, or whatever on the wall. And that helps you stay mindful of it if you're focusing on it. Then when temptation comes along to take a shortcut, when someone is pushing you to lower your integrity, and in the moment, it might seem like an okay thing to do. But by staying mindful on where you're going and your role, it can help you stay firm and strong where other people might give in. And that is incredibly helpful for those ad hoc decisions, from the huge ones about where your company should go to whether you nod at the mail delivery person or not as she walks by.
And in today's sort of information or data overload, where you get, 50 significant emails a day, I'm not talking about the hundreds we get that we just reply or delete, but you do need to make those ad hoc decisions as appropriately and strategically sound as possible. So it's awesome that mindfulness helps that. So again, three essentials of mindfulness: communicating and in a non-judgmental way, truly listening, using time well, and the foundation of meditation. If you were trying to sell this concept to a company that maybe the leaders are recognizing that everybody seems a little stressed out, and what would you say to convince the decision-making body of that company to have you come in, or at least consider some aspect of mindfulness?
Well, I would tell them, do you want to have a big advantage on your competition who doesn't understand this? Right. Some of the numbers you quoted before in our first half were really phenomenal, and the research is becoming more and more clear that productivity and profitability are enhanced when people have good mindfulness skills, when they're not overwhelmed by task. There's a lot of companies out there that are constantly chasing their tail and driving their people to do 20 things in a decent time to do 10. And it kills productivity and morale. So that's a huge productivity advantage.
So those statistics earlier, 60% fewer errors, 37% lower absenteeism, 18% higher productivity. Okay, I'm not a business leader. I'm not a manager in a company, but I'm a mom or a dad. How can I use mindfulness to teach my children to deal with stressors?
This is a huge thing. So part of it is doing this experientially with your children. You can't just tell them to do it. But to say that I want to help you be happy. And whatever terms your children understand. So before we go to bed, we're going to sit quietly for a while, and we're going to just focus on your favorite nature poster, or you're going to talk a little bit about what you most love about your pet. Something soothing, something unifocused, right? That's not bringing them everywhere else, and helping them to then generate for that period of a couple minutes a positive emotional state while they're staying focused. And this is critical for kids because there's, like all of us, we're constantly distracted by our phones, games, all these other things. And we desperately need to be able to balance that and focus when we have to.
Bob Fah, thank you once again for joining me this weekend. You're an amazing leader in your
own
right. People want to get a hold of Bob. It's matchboxgroup, all one word, .com. Bob, thank you for joining me this weekend.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thanks so much, Tom.